Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.
It's part two of JG's Radio Free Insanity.
All right, guys, so join me in welcoming to the show here, Vince Russo. Vince, what's going on, man?
A lot. I basically just got home, been doing a lot of running around. It's been real busy for me on my end.
Yeah, no, I totally hear that. Well, you have a book just out now from ECW Press, Vince Russo, Forgiven. Why don't you tell the guys a little bit about that?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm very proud of the book. I mean, it by far, hands down, is the most meaningful thing I've ever been in my life. You know, being a writer and, you know, probably somewhere at around the age of, you know, 12, when I really started writing and I really enjoyed it. I mean, I always had a dream of writing a book. And I'm so proud of this book. You know, it's different and it's very interesting because basically the book was written a couple of years ago, you know, really the end of 2000, right around the time WCW was shutting down. I wrote the book and it was probably the darkest period in my life. I mean, I was really in a deep depression and I was holding such, you know, grudges, and I had such a bad taste about WCW in my mouth, and I just wrote a book that was very, very vicious. I mean, there were no holes barred, and I mean, I just kind of let it all hang out. And then basically what happened was, after the book was finished, you know, sometime after that, I became a Christian, and I became saved. And once I became saved, I no longer had it in my heart to spew the venom that I once did in the book. Mm-hmm. However, in order to let people see the drastic change that God made in my life, I wanted to more or less keep the old book intact so the people could really understand where I was. So basically what I did was I kept the old book intact, but now through the book there is a running commentary of me as a Christian now commenting on the old Vince and what was going through my head at the time and what I was experiencing. And I mean, it's really a unique book, and I'm just so happy that I was able to have my own words right in front of me before I became a Christian, because I think people are really going to be able to see firsthand, you know, what having faith in Jesus Christ and believe in Jesus Christ can do in anybody's life.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's a big theme that you have in the book about being born again in your religion. And I know that that's kind of a big thing in wrestling right now. There's a lot of guys who are doing that. Let me ask you, because, I mean, you have to hear it. You're in the business. You hear it from people. There are cynics who say, well, it's wrestlers going to doing, the born-again route, trying to get attention that way. But also, and from reading your book, people can kind of pick it up. Do you think that there's such a big influx of people doing that because the way the business is structured, at some point in your life, you're going to be looking for something to kind of lift you out of the funk?
Well, you know what, James? Let me just clarify a few things.
Okay.
When you become a Christian, I'll be honest with you, I wasn't looking for anything. I wasn't looking for God. I really wasn't. He found me. I mean, there's no question about it. I was at a low point in my life, but I wasn't seeking God. I mean, I was at many low points of my life, but, you know, basically he came to me. And I don't think it's a coincidence. I mean, the wrestling business, and I've said it a million times, is a very ugly business. It's a very, very vicious business. And I think what's happening is, as you're in the business for a number of years, I mean, I was in it for 12, 13 years, something like that, you know, as you become older, you start looking at the business a little differently, and your views really start to change. And I'll be quite honest with you, you grow up. You really grow up. And basically, you know, you really start realizing and understanding what life is all about and what your priorities need to be. And I think the business, being as ruthless as it is, it drives everybody to that point. So it's no big surprise to me that you're seeing people like, you know, Shawn Michaels, and of course, you know, Ted DiBiase, and from what I hear, you know, there's a Big Show. You know, I'm hearing he's a Christian now. It's not a coincidence. The wrestling business has a lot to do with that.
Yeah. I mean, well, looking back now, it's got to be a strange situation, kind of looking back on all the frustrations that you went through. I remember one kind of underlying theme that always seemed to follow you to the different promotions that you worked in was the idea of the younger wrestlers against the older wrestlers, the established wrestlers, holding them back. I mean, was it selfish things like that that you witnessed while being a part of wrestling?
Oh, absolutely, man. You know, bro, but you know what? Let me clarify something, because I really kind of learned this as the more I strengthen my walk, you know, with God, the more I understand this. I was in the wrestling business, and now that existed greatly in the wrestling business. But you know what, bro? It's the way of the world.
Yeah.
It's the way the world is. And there were just so many negatives in the wrestling business. And that's why when I became a Christian, those negatives were magnified 100 times over. And it just got to the point that as a Christian, I no longer could be a part of that business. And it's so funny, bro, because of course, you know, you've got people out there taking the pop shots at Vince Russo and saying, oh, you know, Vince is doing this for the money. Well, first of all, when I became a Christian, I left TNA. I gave TNA my notice. I still had a job at TNA. I was getting paid $100,000 a year and working one day a week. So when people come up with, well, Vince is doing this for the money, it's ludicrous. I mean, I was making a handsome salary at TNA, and quite frankly, not even working for it. But like I said, once I became a Christian, I could no longer exist in the mainstream wrestling business.
What was that like for you, man? The day that you decided that you're going to make this change in your life, how did it feel that first day when you kind of turned that corner?
Bro, I'll be honest with you. You when they say born again, mm-hmm. That's how you feel. You almost don't even know who you are, because everything about you is different. You know, from your values, from what's important, from, you know, what you what you really used to value. Everything about you changes. And what that means is your relationship with everybody's going to change, because you're now a new creature. You're now a different person. And, man, I'm telling you, it's a wild ride, because in order to be saved again, I'll use the term, the old you has to die. And you get reborn, you know, a new person in the image of God. And, you know, when I tell you everything about you changes, believe me, I mean, you know, bro, you know, 3 years ago, I would have never been able to walk away from $100,000. I mean, you've got to be insane to walk away from that kind of money. But once I became saved, money meant nothing to me. I fully understood that it wasn't about the money, and it never was. And that's what I mean. Everything about you just changes.
It's been a crazy ride, man. I mean, I was saying before, earlier in the show, I remember, I knew you back when you were doing the thing with Rezzy. I remember when you had the Vicious Vincent show with the Mat Rat and Skull Von Crust and the whole nine back in the day. Back then, did you ever think that one day you'd have gone through as much as you have?
As far as what?
As far as, I remember back, he used to do the WWF, would run shows at Nassau Coliseum, I remember, and he used to do the Nassau Coliseum, I think it was the Arena Club, when you would interview the guys, and it was, just looking back now, I mean, the entire industry just seemed different, everything seemed different. Being there at the time and being a part of it and having such a positive experience being brought in, you know, as you say in the book, to WWF, to Vince McMahon, by kind of being fair to them, more or less, in your opinion. Did you ever think that eventually you would go through so many of the low points you went through?
Bro, if I knew that, I would have never got into it. And we even talked about this before we came on. I got into the wrestling business because of what I experienced at the ground roots and the grassroots of the business. When you read about the book and you read about how I felt about being around guys that were working so hard to make it in the business, and there was such a work ethic, and there was such a camaraderie, and there was blood, sweat, tears. I mean, it was raw. And the fun we had at the Arena Club and the fun we had on the radio show, just entertaining people. And I never in my wildest dreams thought for one second that once when I finally made it to the WWF, it was going to be something completely different. Because within the matter of weeks, the fun was taken out of it. There was no fun. There was no passion for it. There was no enjoyment in it. It became a business, and it became money, and it became every man for himself, and it became doing whatever you had to do to get ratings, because all that mattered was ratings, because the higher the rating, the more money the company was going to make. And everything that I had gotten in the business for no longer existed. And man, that was a rude awakening to me. And that's why I tell so many of these kids that write to me, how do I get in the business? What do I do to get in the business? And I always recommend to them, don't get in the business. Do yourself a favor, because trust me, it's not going to be what you've built it up to be in your mind.
What was the moment that made you realize that? I mean, obviously it wasn't as soon as you signed on with them. How long, I mean, at what point do you remember a conversation or a moment where you just said, well, this really isn't what I thought it was going to end up being?
Yeah, bro, I would say it's probably when I started writing the television and when the ratings started to grow and, you know, we were on a quest to top WCW, and I literally, me personally, I became a man obsessed. I was a man on a mission. Beat WCW, get the higher rating, and bro, nothing else in my life mattered. My wife didn't matter. My children didn't matter. Nothing mattered but winning. That's all that mattered. And, you know, when I got into that mode, I knew something was wrong. I mean, I knew that I've become a part of this. And that was really the reality, the wrestling business and the demons that drive the wrestling business just took over my soul. And that's when I knew, man, you're not the same guy anymore. And that's when the reality really started to sink in.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like the kind of thing where, I mean, you got into it, you had a lot of passion for it. And then over time, I mean, some of the realities that you talk in the book in the very beginning, you talk about friendship in the business and how it's almost, I mean, I don't want to say an illusion, but it's hard to find somebody who's a genuine friend in the industry.
There are no friends in wrestling, bro. There are none, period. And you know what? People can argue that all they want. There are no friendships in the business. And again, the reality of the situation is when this business was set up, it was set up for the promoters to make all the money. In order to do that, they made the boys independent contractors. By making them independent contractors, what they did was they pitted the boys against each other. At that point, it became every man for himself, and everybody was jockeying and vying for the same spots and would do whatever they had to do to whoever they had to do it to in order to get that spot. And to this day, that's the way the wrestling business is still run. There are no true friendships in the wrestling business, trust me.
So, I mean, it's really funny that you bring that up, because actually, in my book that I have coming out, I actually have a chapter devoted to that. And as far as, I mean, it seems to me, and it always has seemed to me, that the promoters almost, they push the idea of the guys kind of, going after each other and keeping each other in line, policing themselves, if you will, all for the sake of kind of driving some sort of contempt between them.
Yeah, bro, it's 1950. It's 1940. It's unrealistic in 2005. Can you imagine, the Boston Red Sox on the same team and everybody being in competition with each other to make more money?
Exactly.
It's unfathomable. But you know what, bro? Here's the bottom line. As long as the boys let that continue, it will continue.
Exactly.
So the reality of it is, as much as I love the boys, and I really, really do, that's my soft spot, you know what, bro? You can't feel sorry for them. Because if they're going to allow that to happen, then it's going to continue to happen. So at the end of the day, they've got nobody to blame but themselves.
See, what amazed me was the fact that now here we are, we're years removed from the Smoky Arenas, yet Vince McMahon is calling himself a businessman. He's in the sports entertainment business. He's an executive. Yet the boys still call themselves carnies, and they almost are proud of that fact. And I think that Vince McMahon kind of feeds off of that mentality that they think of themselves that way.
There's no question about that. It's archaic. It is. If you really had businessmen, I'm talking about professional businessmen, company owners, vice presidents. If you had people like that look at the structure of the wrestling business and how people got paid and benefits and things like that, they wouldn't even believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't even believe that business like that still existed in 2005. But again, the bottom line is, as long as the boys allow it to happen, it's going to continue to happen. Vince has no reason to change that.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that anything will ever come along and change that?
No, because, again, talk about the carny, bro, and talk about the old school. The guys are still of the mentality that if they open their mouths, they're going to lose their spot.
Mm-hmm.
It's ludicrous. I mean, it's almost comical, but they are still put in that position that if they open their mouth, if they try to buck the system, if they try to make a change, they're going to lose their spot. And that's just really unfortunate.
Well, man, at this point, I don't know if you've been watching. Have you watched the product that much at all, WWE?
I watch a little, bro. I'll flip around on Monday nights, and I'll stop for a few minutes to see what they're doing. But I'll be honest with you, bro, and I'm talking as a wrestling fan now. When I sit and I watch both shows, when I catch both shows, first of all, I couldn't sit through a whole show. So when I talk to you about catching both shows, I'm talking about, maybe 10 minutes here or 10 minutes there. The fact of the matter is, both of these shows are written at a 12-year-old level.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's so insulting to the audience, and then they wake up and they get the ratings and they don't understand why nobody's watching. It's written for 12-year-olds. And again, it goes back to that old school, and it goes back to who's writing the TV. Well, what they're doing, bro, is since the people writing the TV are from the old school, they're writing what they know. And unfortunately, in 2005, 1975, wrestling doesn't work anymore.
Well, let me ask you this, because this is something that it's confused me for a while. And, I mean, this is no statement on what you did or didn't do there, but the biggest criticism that people always said when you went to WCW was, oh, this is because Vince McMahon isn't there to filter his ideas. Well, now Vince McMahon is now filtering the ideas that go on his screen now, and they're not good. So, I mean, at what point do you feel that, how much of an influence do you think you had, and how was Vince McMahon as that great...
Well, let me tell you what my biggest beef with Vince McMahon is, mm-hmm. and I don't know if you pick this up in the book, but I'll tell you what my biggest beef is, okay? Vince McMahon, to this day, gives credit to nobody. Mm-hmm. Vince McMahon takes all the credit, and I have a problem with that, bro. I really, really, really do. Because when you have people working for you that have literally given their life to you on a silver platter and are clearly making a difference in your company, and you can't acknowledge them, and you can't put them over, which cost you nothing. That cost Vince McMahon absolutely nothing. You know what, bro? I have a big problem with that, because that is just wrong. And the bottom line is, what people forget is, before I was writing the television at the WWF, the rating was a 1.9. Guess what? Vince McMahon was responsible for that 1.9, and Vince McMahon was a part of that 1.9. So all of a sudden, Vince Russo comes along, and now we're at a 6.9, and Vince is the genius? Vince is the genius, bro, because that's how he spins his machine, and that's how he spins the Vince McMahon media machine. It's all Vince. Vince is the genius. Vince takes credit for everything. Nobody else is doing anything else. And I've always had a big problem with that, because it wasn't just Vince Russo. Vince McMahon had geniuses working for him. Kevin Dunn in television production. David Zahadi, who did all the videos you saw. He had absolute geniuses working for him, and never once did he stop to put anybody else over. And you know what, bro? From a business perspective, from a human perspective, that is wrong. And if there is any problem I have with Vince McMahon, that's my biggest one, because to this day, he's still the same way. And again, I just think that's wrong, bro. It costs you nothing to give your people credit.
Well, he won't even do it on air anymore.
Right.
His character goes up.
Right. Why aren't there credits at the end of a show?
Yeah.
We all know it's fake. We all know it's written. We all know it's scripted. Why are there credits at the end of the show? Who's writing the show?
Exactly.
Who's producing the show? Who's directing the show? You know why there aren't credits? Because Vince wants you to believe, and he's created this mystique, that it's all him. Well, you know what? If it is all him, guess what? He can have his 3.5 rating, and he can have the horrible show that he puts on every Monday night. If he wants to take credit for that now, all the power to him. Take all the credit you want.
I'll tell you, man, just hearing you speak right now, I mean, you get the idea, and I mean, it's totally justified, that feeling that a lot of us have had at different jobs where we feel you're not appreciated, and then when the day comes and you finally do leave, you kind of, I mean, the things that go through your head, what went through your mind the day that you made that phone call and you went to WCW?
Bro, there was so many things, leading up to it, and man, I'll tell you I'll tell you what one of the big things was. Along the line of, you know, me saying Vince not giving anybody credit, I remember, man, who knows how many writers the WWF has now, whether it's 12, 14, who knows? But when we were writing the show, it was me and Ed Ferrara, period. At my house, 10 hours a day, working on every segment, making sure that everybody was involved, everybody had a story. We put everything we had into those shows. And I'll never forget, one day we took a break and we went across the street to get some lunch. And the new magazine, Cigar Aficionado, had just come out, and Vince was on the cover.
Yep.
Okay, this was the same Vince that was doing a 1.9 2 years prior. Okay, there's Vince on the cover. I'm with Ed. We're thumbing through the story on the newsstand, and Ed and I read together where Vince McMahon basically said that Shane McMahon was the creative driving force behind the WWF. And Ed Ferrara and I just looked at each other, and we were flabbergasted. You could have pushed us over with a feather, because here we were at my house together putting 10-hour days in. I don't know what Shane McMahon was doing at that time, but we were writing the shows, and he couldn't even give the credit where the credit was due. And you know what? I'll be honest with you. At the beginning, I really didn't care, because my philosophy was, you know what? You pay me, just give me my paycheck, take credit for everything, that's fine. But I'll tell you what, man, after a while, that kind of wears on you. Because all you're looking is for somebody to say, you know what, let's stop everything right here, and let's just give the credit where the credit is due. It would be like me constantly putting myself over and never bringing up the name Ed Ferrara.
Yeah.
Why would I do that? I mean, I worked with Ed. We worked closely. He was everything I wasn't. I was everything he wasn't. You know, we were a puzzle that fit together. Why would I bring up my name and keep putting myself over without mentioning Ed Ferrara? And you know what? That's why there's the stigma of, oh, Vince McMahon edited everything Vince Russo did. It was Vince McMahon. You know what, bro? That is so old, and if that's the case, then my only question is, if Vince is the genius, then where are his 7 ratings today?
Exactly.
I mean, somebody show me, because I haven't seen him in 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, do you think he's out of touch at this point? Do you think it's too late?
No, he was out of touch when we were there. Mm. I'm out of touch, and I'm only 44. He's out of touch. But, you know, again, bro, it's the nature of the wrestling business. It's, you know, these guys think they're hip and in tune with what's going on in 2005, and they don't have a clue. And you know what, bro? I don't have a clue either, because I'm 44 years old, but the difference is I don't claim to.
Yeah.
I don't want to have a clue anymore. I've got much bigger fish to fry in my life right now, and I've got a much bigger agenda on my plate. I don't care to have a clue anymore. But, you know, they still believe that they got their finger on the pulse of society.
Do you ever still get the itch, though, when you watch the shows? I mean, you ever watch it and think to yourself, well, if I was there, I'd be doing this, and I know I could do that better, and things like that?
Bro, it is... It is so simplistic what they need to do to turn that show around. Mm-hmm. How they can view that show back and not see where they're making their mistakes and what they need to do is beyond my comprehension. I can't understand how they can't look at that show and see what the problems are, and that's what I have a hard time understanding too. Vince McMahon has forgotten what brought him to the dance, and I don't understand that. I mean, I know what brought us to the dance. I can watch that show now and tell you, okay, they need to do A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, because that's what brought us to the dance. And how they could do that week in, week out, and not have a clue to the changes that need to be made, bro, it's really just beyond my comprehension.
Well, do you think they just don't care? Do you think it's a matter of there's no competition that's really biting at their heels right now?
Nah, not really, bro, because there's pride. There's a sense of pride involved. And Vince McMahon knowing that, you know what, we used to do a 7.5 and now we're doing a 3.5, bro, nobody's got more pride than Vince McMahon. Nobody. And on pride alone, they can't just settle for that. But the problem is they don't know what to do. There's so many writers. They're all running into each other. They're all writing stuff to try to appease Vince. They're trying to write what they think Vince will like. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? That's great. But unfortunately, Vince is out of touch. And unfortunately, you need to go toe-to-toe with Vince, and you need to tell Vince, no, Vince, this is what they want to watch on TV in 2005. You need to make a stand, because I'll tell you what, that's the stand I made from 1996 to 1999. Yeah. That's exactly what I did. I didn't write a show to please Vince McMahon, because I knew Vince McMahon wasn't our audience.
Yeah, but I mean, in the end, he took credit for the whole thing anyway. So you think that's the deterrent that people don't even... They think, why even bother? Even if I do save the show, this guy's just going to take
no,
all the
glory? No, you know why, bro? Because, again, where's their pride? I mean, that's... When I talked about Ed and myself, bro, we had great pride in writing every single show. We could have cared less if Vince was going to take the credit. Mm-hmm. We knew we were doing it. We knew we were writing it. And we had one objective every week, and that was for this week's show to be better than last week's. And, bro, that was nothing but pride. We didn't get paid more money if the rating was higher. It was pride, because Ed and myself, we wanted to be the best that we possibly could be. And again, Vince could take all the credit for it that he wanted to, but at the end of the day, you know, him and I, we knew who was writing that show. And at the end of the day, that's all that really mattered to us.
So what's wrong with these people today? Why are they, I mean, if you had to pick a reason why this is going on, any reason at all, what would it be?
Ego.
Ego, how so?
Because they can't look at themselves and say, you know what, we're making a mistake here. You know what, we're doing something wrong. You know what, the people aren't buying this. You know what, we're not as great as we think we are. We need to make the changes. We need to listen to people. We need to give them what they want and not put on the show that we want to see. It's all about their ego. You know, the wrestling business back in the 70s used to thrive on, you know what, we're going to put it out there, they're going to watch it, and they're going to like it, whether they like it or not. Unfortunately, today, it's the same philosophy. But what they don't understand is in 2005, there are 1,000 other choices out there. So guess what? If they don't like it, they're not going to watch it. They're going to watch something else.
Yeah. Well, I mean, after you did that, I mean, you had the WCW stint, which, I mean, any memories from that one? When you went from one to the next, what was the change like for you there?
Well, bro, here's the big difference in WCW, and it had nothing to do with, you know, that there was nobody editing me. Because you can go back and look at the records. You can go back and look at the ratings. When I started at WCW in October 99, the show before I came aboard was when Bret Hart and Chris Benoit had a three-segment match.
Uh-huh.
The show did a 2.6.
Yeah.
Okay, you can go back and look. I was in there with Ed, and for 3 months, we did the show, and we were changing everything. We had to basically start from scratch. The last show I did, before politics took over, the last show I did, and you can check the records, was a 3.6. So we went from a 2.6 to a 3.6 in 3 months. Here was the problem with Vince no longer being a part of Vince. When I worked for the WWF, I was hands off. Vince McMahon protected me from everybody. There was no politics. There was no messing with Vince Russo, because if you mess with him, you mess with Vince McMahon. I was more or less the golden child. When I went to WCW, I was there 1 week when I realized that everybody and their mother was gunning for me. They wanted my head, they wanted it on a silver platter, they wanted my job, and there were politics going on behind my back every single day. I was aware of it. I knew it was going on. There was nobody to protect me. And my philosophy was, you know what? I'm not going to get involved in this game. If they want to replace me because of politics, let them go ahead and replace me, because the people that were going to take my job, I knew what they were capable of doing, and I knew in 3 months later they were going to be calling me back, and that's exactly the way it went down.
Yeah. I mean, do you think, what was funny about the way your career went is that you kind of went right from not being in the business per se to being in WWE, WWF, and then going to WCW as your first real exposure to a company as being a part of it that wasn't the quote-unquote big time, that wasn't as professional as people say WWF was. What was it like adjusting to the different atmosphere?
Oh, man, it was mind-boggling, because I'll never forget the first real experience I had was I went to the first show, and I said to somebody, okay, what time's the production meeting? And the person looked me dead in the eye and said, what's a production meeting?
Oh, man.
I mean, the day of the show.
Yeah.
And I mean, when that person said that to me, I was flabbergasted. And there was, again, bro, there was so much emphasis put on politics and, you know, everybody stabbing everybody else in the back. And there was no Vince McMahon policing it. There was no person there that was going to squash it. And it ran rampant. And that's why I knew. I mean, I knew what was going to happen to me. There was no question in my mind, but the last thing I was going to do was become a part of it.
Yeah. I don't want to dwell on WCW, because I kind of feel like, I mean, you always get questions about that whole period. I do want to ask you about one situation you're involved in TNA that always stuck with me, and that was the Rowdy Rod Piper shoot incident that happened at the Asylum, where he came out and he asked you about the death of Owen Hart. I want to ask you about that night and how everything kind of came about.
Well, you know, it's funny, bro, because that was probably the hottest period at TNA, because let me tell you why. I was involved in the booking then. Bro, I never, ever, ever got the opportunity to single-handedly write a show at TNA. And let me make that clear.
Okay.
There was not one show from start to finish that was written by Vince Russo. Not a single one. But during the period, okay, I was writing my own stuff.
Okay.
And it was probably the hottest time at TNA because, bro, my stuff, a lot of it was a shoot. In other words, I would not show up at the building when everybody else was showing up at the building. I would not go in the locker room, okay?
Uh-huh.
I would not see the boys. I would literally be standing outside of the building, okay, listening to the show, and at the appropriate times, I would hit the ring. They didn't even know I was coming. Mike Tenay, who would be in the ring conducting an interview, didn't know Vince Russo was coming. So a lot of what you saw was real reacting. And everybody had to be on their toes, because they never knew when Vince was coming. They never knew what Vince was going to say. They never knew what Vince was going to do. And right then and there, we were starting to, attempting to take the business to a seminal moments there because it was spontaneous. And everybody, all they could do was react because none of it was scripted. And that right there was where I knew the business in some way, shape, or form needed to go. And that's what I was trying to do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, I didn't have full control of the show. Mm-hmm. So what you were getting was, you were getting that, and then you were getting that followed by a 1975 book match.
Yeah.
And it was atrocious. But the night with Piper is real interesting because what happened was I was outside of the building. Nobody knew I was there. I was listening to the show, waiting for my cue because I knew when I was going to hit. Okay? All of a sudden, I hear the bagpipes. They worked me and didn't tell me Piper was going to be on the show.
Okay.
So I'm outside now. I'm listening to the bagpipes. And you know what? That's cool. Okay, you guys want to work me. Ha, ha, ha. Funny, funny, funny. But hey, you know what? If I want to dish it out, I got to be able to take it too.
Yeah.
So I'm listening to Piper's promo. I'm listening from the parking lot. And okay, say whatever you want about me. That I don't have a problem with that. But man, when he hit that Owen Hart thing, and he said, you know, Vince Russo killed Owen Hart, and I'm out there listening to this, I said to myself, you know what? The only one who's going to be able to get this guy to shut his big mouth is me if I go out to that ring unannounced. Mm. And that's what I did. When I heard him talking that smack about me and Owen Hart, when he had no idea what my relationship was with Owen Hart, no idea how I loved the man, adored Owen Hart,
was
the biggest Owen Hart fan on the face of the planet.
Yeah.
And for him to say that, I said to myself, you know what? If nobody's going to shut him up, I will go out there and I will shut him up myself. And that's exactly what I did. I went out to the ring. He had no idea I was coming. He had no idea I was in the building. He turned around and I was right there. And that was all 100%. Unscripted, a shoot. I didn't know what he was going to do. He didn't know what I was going to do. I'll be honest with you, though. I was very, very, very careful because of the Hogan thing.
Uh-huh.
The last thing I wanted to do was get hit with another lawsuit.
Hogan and then Piper, that'd be a good...
Yeah, I mean, that was the last thing I wanted to do was have another lawsuit on my hands. So,
Russo versus the 80s.
Yeah, so I kind of just hung back and kind of wanted to see what direction he was going to take this in. But basically, then what he did was, when I came, he put the attention back on me rather than Owen, which was exactly what I wanted him to do in the first place.
Have you talked to him since then?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
About this or no? You ever talk about that night again?
No, we never talked about that night. We worked together after that, but we never talked about that night.
Because what I never understood, and this is what I said when the incident happened, I said what made no sense to me was that if he genuinely felt that you were responsible for the death of Owen Hart, why would he agree to work in a company with you? That's what always kind of got me.
Right.
The whole thing. Because even if he didn't know you were in the building, he knew that you were associated with TNA. And he accepted their invitation and showed up. It always struck me as odd.
Yeah, but bro, you also have to understand that the business is built on money and not morals.
Mm-hmm.
It is. I mean, it's built on money and not morals. That's the bottom line.
Well, yeah. All right, man. I guess, you know, we've had you on here for a while. Let's close you out. You're going to talk a little bit about an upcoming show you have coming up, man.
Yeah, we have a Ring of Glory show, a Christian wrestling show coming up at the Forum in Rome, Georgia on December 16th. We've got a great bunch of guys on the show, WWF, WCW, TNA, a lot of people I'm excited, you know, to see work together for the first time. A lot of people I'm working with for the first time. done that I'm really looking forward to. For instance, Rodney Mack and Jazz and Spike Dudley are going to be on the show. I've never worked with them, and I'm really looking forward to not only working with them, meeting them. Then on the other side of the coin, you've got legends. I mean, Ron Simmons is going to be on the show, who I love, and you know, Percy Pringle, you know, Paul Bearer, who I've loved for years, he's going to be on the show. We've got a great mixture of veterans and young guys. You know, Lex Luger is going to be on the show. Jeff Jarrett's going to be on the show. D'Lo Brown, Road Dogg, and then, you know, the younger guys. You know, AJ Styles is going to be there. Abyss is going to be there. And a guy I'm real, real high on that hasn't really made his mark, you know, on the top level yet. But there's a guy by the name of Jimmy Rave, who I know works a lot of at Ring of Honor, who I think is absolutely tremendous. He's going to be there, so that there's a great mixture of talent. And basically, what Ring of Glory is it's wrestling done the right way. There's no politics. There's no backstage negotiating, positioning. On that one night, everybody on that show has one purpose and one purpose only, and that's to glorify God for the gifts that he's given them. And that's all we concentrate on that night, is glorifying God. And I like to describe it as, you know, wrestling the way it was meant to be, the way it ought to be, and the way it should be. And, you know, again, that's going to be in Rome on December 16th. You can check out the website, ringofglory.com, and if you live in the area, you can get tickets through there.
Awesome. Now, you sound passionate again, Vince.
Oh, I love it. I mean, you know, that's the thing that makes me laugh. It's like, you know, of course there are still the Vince Russo critics that saying, oh, you're such a hypocrite. You left TNA and this and that, and now you're doing wrestling again. Let me be honest with you, and as honest as I possibly can. Ring of Glory is so far away from mainstream wrestling and so different from mainstream wrestling. They are in two totally different universes. You could not pay me $5 million to go back and work in mainstream wrestling. Ring of Glory, I would do this for nothing, because this is being done for all the right reasons. And that's the difference. And the difference is, God's hands are all over what we're trying to do at Ring of Glory, and that's what makes it so special.
Nice, bro. We'll be sure to have we'll get somebody to get a report over of your show after it.
Oh, that'd be great, man. I really appreciate that. That'd be great.
All right, Vince, I want to thank you for coming on the show, man. We'll talk to you real soon.
No problem, man.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.
All right, so there you have it. Vince Russo and Ring of Glory Wrestling Promotions. Vince Russo saying he would not come back to mainstream wrestling for $5 million. And I guess as we close the show out, everyone's going to wonder my thoughts on what we just heard. I got to tell you guys, I knew Vince Russo way back when. I always knew the passion that he had for the industry. And I don't know, he sounds excited. And I guess that's a good thing. So to everybody out there, if you're out there in Georgia, definitely give it a check out. And yeah, plenty to come up in the next few days, guys. So stick around, WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. I have a guest lined up for next week that you guys can be really excited about. So definitely come back, check that out. While you're around, check out the website, check out our columns, check out all the stuff that we have to offer. And while you're at it, don't forget to check out Amazon.com and pick up your copy of World Wrestling Insanity, the book, coming to a bookstore near you, and hopefully coming to your pocket that you can pay for and you can hold on to, and you can have your own. You can name it. You could love it. It'll be a sweet thing. So this is James Gutman, guys, saying until next Friday, be well, and thank you for sharing my insanity.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.